Jean-Luc Picard is back.
Now, Whom Pods Destroy.
Welcome to Whom Pods Destroy, a Star Trek discussion podcast. I am the host, Terry DeFennan. However, this is a bonus edition, an extra edition of Whom Pods Destroy, and I am not with my usual panelists, Graham Sibley and Derek Mantle. They're not here. I am instead in a hotel room in Las Vegas with a woman. And obviously the right thing to do in these situations is to get your phone out and press record. That woman is Zoe DeFellin. Hello, Zoe.
Hello. I'm your wife.
Less.
So yes, it's a good thing it's me in the hotel.
I don't know how appropriate it is to introduce you as my wife, I suppose. Because it's sort of like, you know, well, this is my wife.
I could be your sister and that'd be a bit weird.
The thing, yes, indeed. Well, in some families that's not weird at all. Maybe. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we've just finished the Star Trek convention, the Star Trek Las Vegas 2018. We have been here for 5 days, and it's a 5-day event these days, and we've seen some fantastic talks and soaked up the atmosphere and lived very much the Star Trek life for the last 5 days, haven't we?
Yes.
And how have you enjoyed your time in Las Vegas in the Star Trek convention?
I have very much enjoyed it. It's easy to say because we've just finished the last panel, so it ended on a really good note. We had some big news, which we'll share with you all later.
Yes.
Which carried it along. I went to some really interesting talks, ones that I hadn't been to in previous conventions that I've been to. Overall, it was a very good experience.
Well, why don't we pick out some highlights that we enjoyed during the course, starting on the Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
The DS9, because it's the DS9 25th anniversary this year, and so that was a bit of a theme, wasn't it?
Yeah.
The 25th anniversary celebration kick off with Colm Meaney and Hannah Hatte. Obviously, I imagine that most listeners will know who Colm Meaney is, but he played Chief O'Brien in Star Trek The Next Generation and indeed in Deep Space Nine. Hannah played Molly.
Mm.
Miles, his eldest daughter. And that was what did you think about that as a kind of opener up? I mean, it was quite interesting. Colin doesn't come that often, I think, because he works.
Yeah, so. He doesn't come that often. It was nice to see them both together because, from the sounds of it, it's been quite a long time since they've been in the same room with each other. And so she's obviously all grown up now, isn't there?
She's 30.
Yeah. Teeny tiny as well still.
She is.
She's teeny tiny. So it was really nice to see them both together because obviously they had the father-daughter relationship and they were on this show for, you know, years together. So it was nice to see that. So yeah, I mean, it was definitely a good panel. I did expect the first panel to kick off the celebration to maybe be a few more people to be there, but no, it was good to see them both together.
Mm. You then went and saw Inside Trek, Star Trek authors and their books,
yeah,
which was a nice discussion in the secondary theatre with a number of different Star Trek authors of original novels, and you quite enjoyed that as well, didn't
yeah,
you?
I did.
We don't read that many original novels, do you?
But no, I've read some of the Next Gen books and the original series. It was good to hear about what they're doing now. You know, Discovery is out there, and what kind of spin-off books they've got in the works for that. And they did announce that in January 2019 there will be a book that specifically around the character Tilly in Discovery, she's a great character, so that was a good piece of news. So they're going a bit more in depth about her, and there's a couple more coming up about Starfleet Academy, and those are ones that actually I've read a few of and I've always really enjoyed them. So yeah, it was just interesting insight to see what they're doing and what they're thinking coming
up. Because they did some Starfleet Academy books that were set in the Kelvin timeline, didn't they?
No, I read those and they were really good. Really enjoyed them. I'm hoping at some point that you may see the franchise will bring out a TV series of those. or an animated series.
Well, there
maybe.
Is going to be a Star Trek, Starfleet Academy TV show.
Yeah.
But it's set, it's a CBS show.
Yes.
And of course, those Kelvin shows are Paramount.
Paramount, yeah.
So I don't know how likely it is, but hopefully they'll be able to. Because also there was a comic book series of Starfleet Academy.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I think they used different characters, but it was also in the Kelvin universe.
Mm.
And I wonder, you know, hopefully they'll use that as a jumping off point.
Yeah.
I don't remember who the showrunners of the new Starfleet Academy series are,
no.
But I do know that a lot of people got quite excited about. The inclusion of those two people because you know they're pretty good so it's exciting times in that respect. We don't know anything about that show but yeah that was quite cool. I don't think there was that much else that we saw apart from again this was you actually you saw this was a teaching with Trek Star Trek as modern mythology with Dr. Janet McMullen from the University of North Alabama. Tell us a little bit about that.
That was actually really... That was probably one of my favourite talks that I went to this week. So she's obviously a university lecturer and she lectures in media and the impacts on media. And so she has been a lifelong Star Trek fan herself and is a fan of the original series, you know, and other series following on from that and has sat down with her children watching them. But she uses Star Trek in her lectures very often. She says she's, you know, she always uses these as examples of, you know, how certain situations are portrayed in the media and how people are, you know, using these series of voices. It was just, you know, really interesting. She just gave a lecture essentially with what she gave to her students. So it was nice to see that Star Trek is even used in a classroom setting.
And in the secondary theatre as well, so nice, slightly
yeah,
more
quite intimate
atmosphere, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, definitely. But actually she had quite an audience by the end of it. And she
did
was,
she?
Yeah.
The interventions that they have from academics that come in are really very much a feature of these conventions, are really enjoyable.
Mm.
I think that's what sets them apart maybe from some of the other conventions perhaps in Europe, which tend to be far more focused on getting in the stars.
Yeah, that's
not
right.
that doesn't happen here, of course it does, but there is more of that kind of convention feel about it with the Las Vegas one, the more the fact that they, you know, they've got more deep cut talks for hardcore fans. Moving on to Thursday then.
Yeah.
The Voyager panel we kicked off with at 10 a.m.
Yeah.
Which is okay for us because we were up at 5, so
yeah.
It's not really a problem. Robert Beltran, Ethan Phillips, Tim Russ, Jerry Ryan and Garrett Wang. I don't know about you, but I think one of the things that struck me about this panel was that we saw a lot of Chase Masterson, who's been doing, who did quite a lot of moderating of the early panels early on here and did quite a good job, I thought. She's probably a role that she's getting into. But I have to say, probably, I don't think that there was an anecdote that there was shared in that panel that I hadn't heard before. But
no, that's
but
right.
They are nevertheless entertaining to listen to.
Definitely. They're a great bunch, or they seem to be a great bunch of people, and they obviously got a lot of time and respect for each other. And so it's always nice to see that camaraderie still there with them after all this time.
Yeah.
I don't think you're right. I don't think there was anything they said that I hadn't heard in previous years, but so it's just nice to see them together and interact.
And the other I think big moment of the day was Jason Isaacs, who did
he was fantastic.
Did a panel and he was awesome.
He was just completely ruled the stage, didn't he? He was a very, very big presence and massive personality. And my favourite character of the Discovery.
Of Discovery, I think that the thing that struck me about him was how sincere he was, but also what was quite funny about him was that he felt that it was necessary to sort of like go into depth about how he got the role. Went on for quite some time before realising that there were people waiting for questions. If you don't know the setup at the conventions, then you know there's a discussion and then it opens up for the audience to come and ask often quite tiresome questions, frankly.
Yeah. We'll go into that later.
But he got a bit embarrassed, but he was very witty and extremely charming, very, very avuncular. He got in a couple of cutting jibes about William Shatner as well, which kind of went a bit viral, at least within the convention. Ended up with William Shatner sort of like, you know, riposting when it came to his particular panel discussion, which was on the Saturday. But he was absolutely charming and seemed, although he's an actor, so you can never be certain with actors, he seemed, you know, genuinely like, he seemed like he was having fun there and that he would be back.
Mm.
I don't know whether or not we're going to see him back in Discovery again. He was asked that question and he turned it into a joke, but essentially it was no comment. But what was interesting was that he didn't say, no, I'm not coming back.
Yeah.
Which I would infer that he is coming back.
Mm-hmm.
And let's hope that that does happen.
Yeah, definitely.
There was the Ferengi family as well. I'm not sure about you, but I have to say, so this was Max Gradenchik, who plays Rom.
Yeah.
Aaron Eisenberg, who plays Nog, and Chase Marston, who played Lita. I've got a great deal of time for these individuals, these human beings.
Yeah, yeah.
But they always, these shticks are a little bit...
There's no kind of format to them, so they just kind of go on stage and try and wing it. And sometimes it can get a bit cringy, I find. I mean, I just go just out of loyalty, but you know, they were like, you know, they were characters that I really enjoyed in Deep Space Nine, and it's almost like they're your friends, so you feel like you have to turn up, otherwise it's you know, you're kind of betraying them by not being there. But
I think we turned in after that, didn't we?
We
were tempted by the Enterprise panel, John Billingsley, Dominic Keaton and Linda Park, but we didn't. I know you're particularly fond of Dominic Keaton.
I am, yeah, because he's so terrible that it's just, it's brilliant to watch. But the thing is, he knows he is as well, and I think he completely embraces that, as we all should. He knows how lucky he is to have been in Star Trek, and he owns that, and so good for him.
Yeah, absolutely. I think to an extent that's the same with a lot of those Enterprise guys. Is that I think that perhaps they know, because obviously the show got cancelled prematurely, that maybe they're kind of like, they feel quite privileged that they're in for the ride. We did attend an Enterprise panel. We'll talk about that in a moment. But let's talk about what happened on Friday. I think, again, it all kicked off at 10 o'clock. I think we managed to get up a little bit later this time.
Yeah.
That was another DS9 tribute. There was Ira Stephen Bear, James Darren, Nicole DeBoer, Chase Masterson and Andy Robinson.
Yeah.
It's such a long time ago now. It seems like it was actually only 4 days or 3 days ago, but it seems like a long time ago now.
Mm.
Ira has been quite impressive with this in this convention. He's an impressive guy anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
The show, very much the showrunner of Deep Space Nine from start to finish, and a very, very talented guy. And we got some good insights about, you know, the making of the show and the fact that, you know, it's 25 years later. But one of the things that I think that got me about that was just how much love and respect there was for Andrew Robinson, the actor who played Garrick, and Garrick the character.
Yeah, that's right.
And I don't know about you, but it gave me pause to reflect on Garrick and a great character he was.
Definitely, and it actually made me... I mean, I wanted to go back and rewatch them all again quite soon anyway, but it did make me actually really want to go back and watch some specific episodes that Garrick plays quite a big role in. And,
yes.
And just, yeah, and say revisit that and you know, with his words in my mind.
Yeah. Let's move on to Denise Crosby, Michael Dorn and Gates McFadden.
Oh, yeah.
That was a lot of fun, wasn't it?
Always good fun, because those three, they obviously really love each other so much as friends, and obviously it's been so many years now, you know, since The Next Generation, that, you know, to see that closeness still after all these years is really nice. And they've got some great stories, and you know, some of them actually I hadn't heard before.
Mm.
Most of them I had, but there was a couple that they put in there that I hadn't heard before. But Tasha Yar obviously only one series, but you know, the others integral characters in that series.
She seemed really comfortable in her own skin. I don't think she's an absolute pro. You never got the impression that she regrets for a single moment.
No, not at all. The decision that she took to leave.
I went along and you joined me for a little while, but I think you left after a while. The Mission Log discussion.
Yeah.
In the secondary theatre. Mission Log is a podcast, I'm sure, actually, and our listeners know full well that it's a podcast because it's an extremely popular podcast, a bit of a daddy in that respect. That was about Star Trek. No, that was it. Was But Is It Star Trek? It was the name of it, and it was an attempt to try and discuss the kind of conversations and arguments and stand-up rows that happen online about the nature of Star Trek and what it actually is, which I thought was quite an interesting premise. But I mean, the thing is, it's a little bit meta, I guess. I mean, everybody knows it's a kind of a stupid conversation anyway. And the only reason why people have it is because there are some people online who get so angry about Star Trek that it ends up becoming a thing when really it's very much whatever goes on in your head.
It should just be however you interpret it.
Basically, there's not much to say there.
I think that was just a filler panel in my mind.
I'm sure they'll appreciate that.
Well, I don't listen to their podcast.
I listen to their podcast. I think it's a great podcast.
I'm sure it is.
I'm not gonna disagree with you. It's not healthy to disagree with your wife, and particularly when she's making sense. Then there was Walter Koenig. I didn't see that much of that. Did you see much of that?
Yeah, I sat through the whole one of that. I sat through, but no disrespect to Walter. But again, it's one of those things where you feel like, for the respect of that person, and because they're so integral to why Star Trek is what it is today, that you feel like you kind of have to turn up to these things. It's the same with Shatner. You just have to go. And, you know, look, Walter is a very sincere man and, you know, he is Star Trek. But everything that he said this year, he said, you know, in previous years.
Yeah,
no, but in fairness, what else more is...
There is nothing more to say. I get the impression that he's like, what, you want me to come back again? You want me to come back and say the same things that I've said last year and the year before that and the year before that?
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, in fairness, he just gets asked the same questions as well.
He does.
I don't think there's really that much more. The moderator, I think, did a good job in trying to get him out of it. He seemed particularly grumpy on this occasion. I think he's grateful for the opportunity to do this. Obviously, he gets paid. I'm sure he's grateful for that. It's difficult. He's been doing it for so long that he's able to convey a general frustration sometimes without making it sound like he's ungrateful or disrespectful to the audience that he's there.
I think he's sincere to the audience, but I think that also, and he said it himself a couple of times as well. He just said, look, my role in Star Trek was a bit of a nothing role.
Yeah.
And so I don't know why you make such a big deal out of it.
Yeah, I know.
Obviously, you know, we have our view and he has his
exactly,
view.
But it's funny that he doesn't get why people like Chekhov, because he thinks Chekhov didn't do much. And in many respects, he's right. Chekhov didn't do much.
No.
But he did do something.
Yeah, exactly.
And there's a lot of value, I think, in those supporting characters. Certainly, you know, certainly my recollection from, you know, back when I was watching it in the 80s as a teenager. In the afternoon, we were treated to Jonathan Frakes and Marina Sirtis.
Always a comedy surgeon. Actually, it's funny because I think that sometimes I find Marina can be quite grating. Not grating. No, that's probably the wrong word, but she can be almost quite aggressive.
She's quite abrasive, isn't she? Yeah.
And I think this time she seemed to be just a little bit more relaxed or a little bit less pissed off with the world, because I think she is pissed off with the world, but she's obviously in a very good place in her life right now. she's enjoying it.
She seemed
or
a lot
someone
more comfortable.
Has told said to her that you need,
you need to rein it back
just
in.
Rein
yeah.
it back. But it was actually a really you know, it was really nice. It was a really nice panel. They told some great stories. And actually, again, there was a couple of stories there that I hadn't heard on previous panels. Frakes has always given value because obviously he's working on so much other stuff.
Yeah, he's doing Discovery
outside of Star Trek, and you know,
he's basically a director now.
Yeah,
And so you know, he's really interesting guy. Mm. That was a point where they were talking about, because Marina was talking about, look, you've heard these stories before. If you come here every year, you've heard these stories before. And then it was sort of like put to, I think it was Jonathan who sort of said, well, you know, it's a bit like, you know, going to see your favourite band or listening to, these same stories. And you just want to hear them because it's the way they're told.
Yeah, exactly.
By the people who tell them.
Yeah.
And that people just like to hear them again.
Yeah.
And that's the interesting thing about, because this is our third con. Mm. And I thought to myself, after the first one, I thought, if we keep coming back here, we're just going to hear these stories again, aren't we? And I thought, well, am I going to want to do that? And actually, to be honest with you, I kind of do. I enjoy the prospect of going, oh, I remember this story.
Yeah, yeah.
And I quite like that.
Well, again, it's just sitting in a room with your friends, though, because you kind of feel like they are your friends.
Yes.
Because you've spent so many hours watching them.
Yeah.
And yes, it's more about their character, but so you almost do have a loyalty to them to turn up.
Yes.
And hear them tell you the same stories. But like you would do your mates. No. So I mean,
we've dragged our asses, you know, across the Atlantic to and the best part of the US to be here. So yeah.
Exactly.
We are gonna come here and we're gonna listen to their stories.
Yeah, that's fine.
One more time.
Yeah.
And keep going. I very much enjoyed the DS9 documentary talk.
This is really good.
It's a new documentary coming out called What We Leave Behind to commemorate the 25th anniversary of DS9. Apparently, it's very, very good. It was crowdfunded on Indiegogo, and we got some really interesting insights about what to expect. And they showed us some footage, they also showed us some footage of some clips from the original from DS9 that. Had been remastered, had been cleaned up, and they looked really amazing. And it led to this questions from the floor from some Scottish geezer, as it happens, saying that, you know, in a very, I have to say, very entitled way, you know, that DS9 should be completely, fully remastered.
Mm.
And we work in media, so we know a little bit about how this process works. And it is arduous, labour-intensive, and really expensive. You know, 170 episodes to fully remaster. Especially when they explained to him that, you know, actually all of the footage is in
various different locations.
It's in a mountain in Colorado or something like that, or wherever it was.
Exactly. It's scattered around, and also I think,
and it's not in order, so you need to go looking around, finding it to piece it all together.
And also, realistically. We love the show, but how many people are going to go out and purchase that?
Yeah.
And you know, at the end of the day, CBS, they are a commercial venture.
Yeah.
And so why would they go out to all of that expense? And it's a colossal project. Yeah. You're not talking about banging that out in a couple of weeks.
No.
That's
going to take years.
Probably in excess of a year to get it all done. For what return? And I would love it more than anyone else to have that. But I mean, I can see why at the moment this isn't at the top of that priority list. Yeah. I think there's other stuff to be done first. But you know, look, I think that even if there's just little bits that can be redone in the documentary, then that's a great start. And look, maybe if they see the pickup of the documentary, and if there's enough people out there. That are showing that they are still fans of the show and that they're following it, then, you know, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I personally can't see it because, I mean, I can only imagine that Blu-ray sales are probably in gradual decline.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, because of streaming platforms. And so without that, frankly, you know, you're then talking about putting it out on streaming services and on, you know, syndicated television. And frankly, you're just not going to make your money back.
Yeah,
or you're not
going
to make it back in years. So no. I don't think it's worth doing it. So for me, Saturday is when the con really got kicked off.
Yeah.
Those first 3 days, I have to say, 2.5 days, things were pretty quiet. It was as quiet a con as I'd been to in the previous two. We were quite taken aback by how quiet it was, actually. But things started to get quite busier on the Saturday. Obviously, domestic lot coming in, taking only, you know, for the weekend. Weekend only passes, general admission lot.
Yeah.
And they're coming.
It's when all the discovery panels were coming on as well.
The discovery panels were coming on as well.
Shatner
was on.
You know,
and then the big announcement,
Kate Mulgrew,
which we're about to talk about. But first, we saw Kate Mulgrew.
Oh yeah, who's just an I mean, we saw her the year before last.
Yeah,
and we saw her this year, and yeah, I mean, she's just an absolute pro, and just the kind of person that, you know, you want to be mates with.
Yes, you do. Kind of, you would love to be mates with.
Oh,
Kate
I'd
Mulgrew,
want her to be my mum. Like, if my mum disappeared and I had to pick another mum,
it would be Kate Mulgrew.
It would be Kate. Totally. I mean, I feel like if any people out there are looking, you know, for female role models, like, why are we looking at the Kardashians? Why is Kate Mulgrew not that person? Because she's the complete package. I mean, she's just...
Well, she's lived a life, hasn't
she? This is the thing. She's lived a life. I think she's a realist. She's a real person. And although she obviously clearly knows that she's very lucky to be in her privileged position right now, but she, you know, she's been through the houses to get here.
She was laying down some advice. The questions from the floor were mainly young women, actually.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Who, in many ways, were bringing some of their own problems to her.
Yes, exactly.
Which, in some respects, us being uptight Brits, was quite uncomfortable to listen to. But the manner with which she dealt with them, the frankness with which she dealt with them, was very refreshing.
Yeah.
And I have to say that I have a huge amount of admiration for her as a person and as a professional as well.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, we haven't watched all of Orange Is the New Black, but we've watched enough to know what a superb job she's doing as Red as well.
Yeah.
And she is, she's very much at the top of her game.
Yeah.
Absolutely superb pro.
Yeah.
Followed by George Takei.
Yeah.
Who...
Gorgeous George.
Gorgeous George. And George does what he does.
He does what he does. You know, I think the thing is, whenever I've seen George before, he can... It's funny because he doesn't actually really talk that much about Star Trek.
No.
He talks about...
He talks about his legacy project,
which is great, and he can sometimes get quite political, which some people don't like and some people do. I mean, look, but again, it's one of those ones where you can't not go. You have to go and see George.
Although, I mean, there were some people who definitely
they didn't go.
They didn't go. We spoke to some people. Well, we overheard some people talking. Saying that they weren't there because they didn't like some of the things that he talked about this frankness about his own political position, particularly in regards to the current administration.
Yeah, he's just saying what other people aren't saying. So I mean,
yeah, but his own unique, well, it's not unique, but his own history. He was interred as a 5-year-old. He was when the Japanese population of America were interned, you know, he's worked very hard to raise awareness of that, and obviously there's stuff going on here in the US that is, you know, very close, if not in many ways worse than what's going on there. It's all a matter of opinion, obviously. And he raised this, and yes, that made people uncomfortable. One of the things that has become apparent about this convention is there are quite a lot of conservative Star Trek fans.
Yeah.
They don't appreciate, you know, what they consider to be being preached to by, you know, liberals. I find that peculiar personally because it's such a liberal show, but it just goes to show that, in fact, that, you know, it does appeal to people with different views.
Yeah.
And let's move on to Bill Shatner. He's another one, actually.
I really enjoyed Bill this year, actually.
He was good this year.
I felt like he was better than the last time I saw him.
I mean, he's still relentlessly plugging his shit.
Of course he is. But then what else has he got to say? As we said about the others, there's only so many stories you can tell about your experience in Star Trek. And bearing in mind, you know, he's actually got even less to talk about than other series because they only have 3 series. And although there was the movies, you know, there's just less stories to tell, right?
Yeah.
I mean, So there's only so many times he can talk about his friendship with Leonard and...
Yes, and, well, in fact, I don't think Leonard came up at all in this one,
no,
did
actually, no, he didn't. And yes, it was very much all about his other projects and what he's doing at the moment. But actually, he was a lot of fun. He was a lot of value this year. There were some really cracking stories that were in there. And he, everyone was laughing.
Yeah,
everyone was laughing.
Yeah. He's not for everyone, William Shatner.
No.
But I think it's reached a point now where those who don't like him will go, you know what, I'll sit this one out.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought that he handled the questions quite well because many of them are quite fawning. I mean, he's now, what, he's 150 or something like that now, isn't he?
And
so, I mean, he's listening to questions and he's not quite understanding them, so he's filling in the gaps. And not because his brain's addled, but just simply because he's processing so much. But the guy is always working, is the thing. There's always projects going on, and I imagine that that's what keeps him going.
Yeah.
And yeah, I accept that there's a lot to dislike about William Shatner as a human being, but, you know, I have to say he was pretty good value for the hour that he was there.
He was, yeah,
and I found myself laughing quite a lot.
Yeah.
Perhaps I shouldn't have been, but I did, and I make no apologies for that.
Mm.
Immediately afterwards, we were told there would be a major announcement.
I was a bit dubious about what
this
major
announcement about this
because
thought,
we've been told about. We've been told in the past about stay put because
stay
be
put. We've got this great announcement, and it's like
it's
something.
Rubbish. Yeah, yes, exactly. It's just like your laundry will be delivered for kind of thing, you know. So, but I mean,
mind you, that was a great day when that happened.
Yeah, we was told that there would be a showrunner from Discovery.
Yeah, there. Alex Kurtzman.
And so I figured that it may be something to do with the new series. Maybe we were going to see another clip which hadn't been previously put out at the Comic Con.
That was my guess.
That's
it was going to be another trailer.
That's what I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
Or just some kind of spoiler or something.
Yeah.
But what we got was not what we expected.
So Alex Kurtzman came on and made a brief introduction. And he said, I'm going to make an announcement about the next TV series, the next programme, next Star Trek show. And then he said, but I'm going to introduce you to someone who's going to tell you about, make the announcement himself. And he stepped aside, the doors opened, and who steps out?
Patrick Stewart. Yeah, I wish we had a soundbite from the audience because it was so great. Because
it was amazing. Yeah.
So obviously you've got everyone standing up, cheering, you know, they couldn't believe there was a lot of gasps, a lot of camera flashes going on. And then it was just went to kind of deathly silence. And then this guy just shouted out, "Holy shit!"
It was so funny.
And even Patrick was standing there, and he was laughing.
Patrick was just clearing his throat, ready to speak. And this guy's timing was epic. He went, "Holy shit!" And we went, and because obviously this guy must have thought, well, we know why. Because the moment we saw him, we thought, okay. Because we'd heard the stories about a potential Picard TV series.
Yeah.
But they were only kind of rumours. And then and he was exemplifying what we were all thinking. We were all thinking, holy shit.
Yeah.
Patrick Stewart's going.
It was a nice moment, actually.
And it was great. And he gave a little bit of a speech, an introduction about it. Presumably while people from the corridor who weren't in to pile in to go, God, Patrick.
Yeah.
But it completely altered the atmosphere at the convention.
For sure, 100%.
Which had been fine.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, this was electric.
I did actually have a little laugh to myself, though, because I was taken aback a little bit this year to the fact that not everyone turned up for William Shatner.
Mm.
And I thought that, look, even if you're not a massive fan of his, again, it goes back to, you kind of feel like out of respect, you should turn up for these things. And they didn't. Even though they had been told the day before that there was going to be this big announcement, they didn't show up. And so there was a bit of part of me that was actually kind of laughing inside because I thought, ha, you're going to miss this. Because you thought that you didn't need to turn up for William Shatner.
We spoke to very
We then spoke to a lady the next morning.
We spoke to a
weird
lady from Wisconsin the next morning.
She did miss it.
And we went, did you see, were you there? And she looked at me and kind of...
She was very sheepish.
Stiffened ever so slightly. No, I didn't. Yeah. I wasn't there.
But anyway, we digress. But I mean, all of this was going through my mind while... You know, when he walked through those doors.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and it was great. And obviously, he announced that there's going to be, he said, Jean-Luc Picard will return or something like that. And
I'll be back.
I'll be back. Yeah. And we were very excited. It's apparently so it's set something like 20 years later is what he used. We didn't say 20 years later from what, so we're inferring 20 years later from Nemesis. But it could be 20 years later from TNG series finale, who knows. It really isn't that big a deal. Needless to say, there are some folks online who are getting terribly excited, and of course there are some people who are getting going online saying, I wanted to be this. Which is basically setting yourself up for disappointment.
He was quite, one of the first things he said though is that this Jean-Luc Picard is going to be different.
Yeah.
Do not expect the Jean-Luc Picard that you know and love.
Well, I imagine that must be how they sold it to him. Yeah.
This is it. And the thing is, you kind of want it to be a different man because it's in 20 years' time. And
yes.
The thing is, in 20 years' time, we're all going to be different people.
Well, we do.
So, this is it. So, one thing's for sure, they've not written a script.
No.
This is so
we don't know. Yeah.
This is so far off. This is probably at least a couple of years in the making.
Yeah.
And so I think a lot of people can give speculation and a little bit two cents about what they want and what they don't want. But, I mean, look, I think we should just be... I think right now everyone should, instead of talking about what they want and what they don't want or bitching and hollering or whatever, let's just all enjoy the fact that Jean-Luc Picard is coming back.
We're getting Jean-Luc Picard back.
What it is, we can worry about a little bit further down the line. But
I think it's going to be great. I mean, I will actually indulge in a touch of speculation because I watched a movie quite recently, and I'm sure listeners are aware of it, a movie called Logan, which is the final sort of like Wolverine film from the X-Men saga, and Patrick Stewart plays Charles Xavier in this franchise, and it's very much, it's set in the future and it's at the end of Charles Xavier's life, and he cuts a very melancholy figure in this film, and I wonder whether or not maybe there's elements of this that's been pitched to him that maybe attracts him about this. Mm. And a lot of people, I think, would be unhappy to see a melancholy Jean-Luc. They'd like to see that. But the impression that I got was actually that might well be what we'll see. Mm. But hopefully it'll be a nice redemptive arc and that will end happily, you know,
as people would
want, because he's a much loved character and I think everyone wants him to do well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So that was, to use a term, fucking amazing. Pretty much knocked everything into a cocked hat, and we had a great time and we went out and enjoyed ourselves. I watched the Behind the Music, the Michael Giacchino, Dennis McCarthy and Jeff Russo, which was awesome. It was so good to, because Michael Giacchino obviously he's your modern day John Williams, Jerry Goldsmith at the peak of his powers, so it was very refreshing to see him there. Jeff Russo, much more of an upcoming composer, the composer of Legion, obviously the composer of Discovery, which is why I was there. And then they had Dennis McCarthy, who's the guy who did all those TNG, DS9, Voyager, Enterprise, hundreds of them, and very old school. And they were loving him. I mean, these two cop shots, and they were like, you know, really looking up to him. And that was
nice.
That was really nice. I enjoyed that. We didn't watch the Discovery panels, did we? I don't think we caught any of that.
No.
We gave that a miss. In fact, I think we knocked it on the head until we went to the gala, which was the music evening, music of that. There was a great sadness, actually. Mm. There was the tuba player of the orchestra collapsed just minutes before the performance, and the performance was delayed, and he was taken off, and sadly, he passed away. Mm. We didn't find this out until later. There must have been touch and go as to whether or not they were going to go through with that performance. Mm. But that was a very, very, very sad moment. Mm. Nevertheless, it was a really enjoyable evening.
Good concert, yeah.
So that was Saturday. And then we're now here.
Now we're here, the last day.
Friday. It's Sunday.
Sunday, it was a late start.
When you're on holiday, every day is Friday, I suppose, isn't it? They started with Famke Janssen. We only caught the back end of that, didn't we? But that was
correct.
Fun, wasn't
it? Yeah.
She looked like she was into that. We had a great panel discussion with Vaughan Armstrong and Gary Graham, Anthony Montgomery, and Connor Trinneer from Enterprise.
Yeah,
and that was good. And I was quite impressed with Anthony Montgomery. I thought he was a good guy.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
got a good story to tell.
And had some good stories. And then I really enjoyed the director's cut. panel with René Aubergenois,
yeah,
LeVar Burton and Robert Duncan McNeil,
yeah, I did.
Who are all, well, not so much René, but LeVar and Robbie are now working directors off the back of the starting there.
Yeah.
And that was really interesting because we got to listen to the technical aspects of the show.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we learned some interesting insights about the technical principles of the show that Rick Berman imposed upon the directors to make it look consistent.
Yeah, yeah.
And I really appreciate that. I learned something.
Yeah, no,
that.
Absolutely. It's good to hear as well that, you know, that they all made such a big point of saying as well that, you know, they were encouraged to take these roles. Who was it that, you know, he got his first episode after two seasons?
That was Robbie McNeil.
Robbie, that's right, yeah.
Because he said...
He asked on day two
of being on the show
that he wanted to be a director.
Yeah.
And, you know...
He asked Rick Berman.
Rick Berman basically turned around and just said to him, look, okay, well, you know, shadow people, go to the production meetings, get out there. And we'll see what we can do, and maybe on series 3 or 4 or 5, you know, you'll get your shot. And I think actually, as it transpired, it was series 2, and then Frakes had to drop out of directing an episode for whatever reason, and so they called him up and said, okay, Robbie, can you do this show?
Frakes was doing First Contact.
That's right, yeah.
He was scheduled to do an episode, he got First Contact. Yeah. And they said, would you want to do that?
And he said yes, and they said, okay, we're starting Monday.
Yeah.
And so, but yeah, I mean, it obviously sounds like they got lots of encouragement to pursue this path if, you know, it was felt that they had the aptitude to be able to do it. So,
That was awesome.
Yeah,
that
was good. Absolutely awesome. It was really good, really interesting.
And so then we had the Discovery panel that we did go to.
Yeah.
Which was the one with Wilson Cruz, Shahzad Latif, Anthony Rapp, and Mary Wiseman.
Yeah, brilliant.
That was brilliant.
Brilliant, yeah.
I think the thing that struck me the most about that was how Discovery... I mean, you and I have had arguments about Discovery we're not in accord about, you know, to what extent we like this show. But what is quite clear is that this show is reaching an audience.
Mm.
And I was quite... I was really impressed with the way that they came across, particularly Wilson Cruz. I thought it was amazing. You remember Wilson Cruz from My Cyborg
Life?
From
back in the day, exactly. Yeah, from when I was,
looks
25 years ago.
Yeah, he looks amazing.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. But I mean, I remember at the time it wasn't a massively big cult show because it actually got very little audience in the UK anyway. And I don't think it got that much audience in the US because it was cancelled. You know, not after a few series, I think. But I think that at the time it was a big deal because he was a teenage actor that was cast in a gay role and he was openly gay.
And he's out, yeah. Mm.
And, you know, obviously, could you imagine being... Well, I don't think he was... I think he was maybe late teens, early 20s when he did that role. And he was playing a teen, you know, like a 17-year-old. But, I mean, can you imagine being his age at that time in Hollywood, playing that role? And so he'd already done that, you know, 20-odd years ago. And then to now be in this role, which is, you know, they're playing the first kind of gay couple within Star Trek. And he's obviously very proud of that fact and as he should be. I mean, it's a great achievement and... you know,
the audience members who came up to the microphone to ask questions were clearly quite moved by that and appreciated the fact that this show was representing them.
Exactly.
I was also quite struck by some of the young ladies who come along, young women who came along to say to Mary Wiseman how much, you know, I mean, I've seen strong female characters in Star Trek before, but none of them have been like me, and that's what Mary Wiseman.
She was just a regular
Tilly, she's
a regular nerdy girl.
Yeah, yeah, and brilliant,
and looks like,
and looks
a
like
normal person.
Yeah, looks like a normal person.
You know?
Yeah,
yeah, absolutely.
I know it's I have to say that experience gave me a deeper appreciation of Discovery as well.
Yeah.
And I'm quite looking forward to the next season. But okay, so I think then after that was... we didn't go and see George. Then after that...
No, after that we went to actually have our whenever we come to this, or for the last couple of times we come to this, we always have one picture. We only have one picture taken.
Yes. And who's he with?
Well, I mean, I call him Sir Jeff.
Sir Jeff. Sir Jeffrey. Sir Jeffrey Combs.
Jeffrey Combs. Yeah. So we had our picture taken with Sir Jeff, which we have, you know, say this would be our third one. This year we're going to use it as a Christmas card, and I'm even going to send him a copy of it.
He won't think that would be strange at all.
No, why would he? But the thing is, we go as far to even wear the same T-shirts when we get the picture taken with it. And we consciously keep these two shirts until the Sunday.
When we know we're going to go and see Jeff.
Anyway,
I know.
So that was Jeff.
I know. It's
then
bad.
We caught the end of.
The last Discovery to Power, which was Sonequa, Martin Green, Doug Jones, James. Oh, not James Frayne, he couldn't make it.
Yeah.
And some Mount. Yeah. I mean, that. What did you think of that? What was your opinion of that?
I have no opinion on that.
You have no opinion of that. You're not a big fan of the lead, are you, in Discovery? Let's not go into that. Because why?
Why?
Why be unkind?
Yeah, exactly.
You have your opinion, and that's fine.
Exactly.
And then what we did see after that, they did a screening of the DS9 episode Far Beyond the Stars.
Yeah, which was great. It was good to actually sit down and watch an episode, because actually usually at these conventions, you kind of feel like, oh god, yeah, I wish I could just watch a bit of Star Trek now.
Star Trek,
you know, but obviously you can't. But we did get the opportunity to watch that, and you know, it's a great episode. But also then afterwards they had the panel discussion with the entire
almost the entire ensemble.
Everyone was involved.
Obviously Avery wasn't there, but I mean, and Siddig doesn't usually come to conventions as well.
Yeah.
He wasn't there, so. But I mean, you know, it was an amazing episode of Star Trek. And I mean, if you're struggling to remember which one it is, it's the one where Sisko dreams about being a pulp science fiction writer in the 1950s in Harlem. And I'm sure you'll remember it from there. And the level of detail that they went to and the conversations that they had, and it was really interesting. It was a little bit of a chaotic panel because there were so many people there. But it was really nice, and it was a lovely way to
round
finish
it off.
The convention.
Exactly. Yeah, this is it. And it was a really nice touch, actually, because as far as I'm aware, they've not done that before at a convention. This is the first time they've been able to screen an entire episode. So that was nice. And I think also because it's a storyline that is so prominent in today, it's so relevant for the world that
it's
we live in today.
Relevant today. Yeah.
And so I hope that what it's done is everyone has sat back, watched this, and remembered that episode, and it's struck a chord with them. And because that's obviously ultimately what this is all about.
Yeah.
It's about, you know, and the reason why Star Trek is what it is, it's because it tells these, you know, these stories, and it gives them a platform to do that. And so, you know, if that makes everyone sit back, and it might make them feel a bit uncomfortable as well, but I mean.
Yeah, but that's not a bad thing.
But that's not a bad thing.
I think that there was quite a lot of uncomfortable shifting in seats during the course of this convention.
I think there was, yeah.
Because there were some political statements being made by a lot of the actors who have become politically active.
I think
active.
They were quite, in fairness though, I think they were quite.
They were mostly
the most
reserved,
part, they were quite.
Yeah.
They certainly wasn't coming out and giving their full two cents. And they weren't coming out saying this or that. They were just saying, okay, you should all go out. And
yeah, it's a kind of, whatever, we're, however
we
you...
We need to be spreading love and not hate.
Yeah, exactly.
And
well,
look,
Colin Meaney, he said, like, basically he said there's a fascist in the White House, which is a pretty strong thing to say. But, I mean, that wasn't the norm.
But, although, I mean, look, they've got a platform and they've got a microphone and, you know...
They're
going to say something.
I think it's reflective of... I suspect it's kind of reflective of the general political divisions that exist a lot in Western cultures right now. There's we are all having a frank conversation with each other about the way that we think that things should be done. And that was reflected in this. There was a moment during the Enterprise panel when somebody got up and asked a specific question and was specifically anti-Trump. I mean, and they ended up putting a graphic up on the screen saying, please no more political questions. We will discontinue your question if you ask a political question again.
In a way though, that's, I just feel like, you know, it's kind of a lot of the panels over the 4 or 5 days, you know, we talk about how the fact that the reason Star Trek has been going for so long is because it wasn't just about talking about sci-fi stories. It was, yeah. it was, you know, real life matters. It was going into, you know, there were stories about people that were homeless. There's stories about war.
Yeah.
You know, there's stories about race, you know, race,
gender,
sexuality,
yeah.
gender, you know, all of these things. And so I can't, I get it when people say, I've spent a lot of money to be here. I don't want to talk about politics, but ultimately...
You're a Star Trek fan.
You're a Star Trek fan. And we're in a forum now where we're saying the world is a very difficult place. And what we should be doing is taking lessons that we've all learned from Star Trek and being able to push that forward out into the world and saying, okay, well, this is our views. Because if we're all Star Trek fans, we all believe in a great future and in a very positive future. And so, you know, if a few people are going to stand up on a stage and say, why are we shitting on each other, then, you know,
yeah,
they should be able to say that.
They should be able to do
and
it,
look,
yeah.
you know, if you don't agree with that's fine.
Get up and walk out.
You can leave and you can go into the next auditorium and they'll probably say the same thing to you. But ultimately, what are you doing here?
Well, yeah, exactly.
But
yeah.
anyway.
Yeah. But I mean, in general terms then, about the convention itself, I know you've got some opinions about the length of the convention, perhaps even the price of it.
I think we said it earlier, it's always the way when you leave on the Sunday or when it all finishes up, and it finishes up on a high note, which it did for us with the panels today, you think, oh yeah, you know, this is brilliant, I want to come back next year, you know, let's sign up now.
Yeah.
You know, you always feel like that. And you know, so overall I enjoyed it. I do feel like that what they did is for the 50th anniversary, they extended it by one day because there was obviously so much to cram in. And so they extended it from 4 to 5 days. Ticket prices obviously reflected that additional day. But since the 50th was a couple of years ago, they've still kept it at 5 days. But they've had less content to put it over there. So in fact, actually, it's about 4.5 days, which they could easily condense into 4 days. But they haven't really put the prices down. And things like, you know, there's not as many vendors out this year, and I guess that's telling to, you know, about the way times are at the moment. We haven't all got this disposable cash to go out and buy Star Trek merchandise or whatever, or whether it be because it's 5 days and vendors can't take 5 days.
They can't commit to that length of time, yeah.
You know, a whole host of reasons. And so I think that if I was creation personally, I would probably be looking at maybe reviewing the length of this, because say not everyone can take this much time to go to a convention. And say Wednesday, Thursday and Friday were very quiet.
There's
so many empty seats.
Yeah. I mean, even in fairness, during the really big ones. I mean, when a couple of years ago for the 50th, you know, when you had the heavyweights coming in, the heavyweight TNG guys, and Bill Shatner, and even George, and you know, I mean, they were pack out.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, we didn't have anything like that this time around. I can only assume they just didn't sell enough seats. But in general, however, we've had a great time, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
And we're talking about maybe going back next year.
No, although, for sure we'll be back. It may be not next year, but certainly the year after.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay, well,
had a ball.
Great. Well, I think on that note we should finish. Zoe, thank you so much for joining me on this podcast.
Thanks for having me.
It's been great. And maybe we'll have you back again if you want to.
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe.
Maybe, she said.
Maybe.
Right, excellent. Well, in that case, we'll leave it there. No further announcements. It's a bonus episode. There's nothing more that we need to say. We'll be back. Graham, Derek and myself will be back with a regular episode of Impulse Destroy in due course. And until then, see you later.
Bye.
Whatever happens in the next few years, what you just did makes it all worthwhile anyway.